always when we process reports, we don't go back into the introduction and the background. We go direct to observations and recommendations. So observations are on four subparagraph, paragraph, no, sub, yes, they are on four. Three is about key issues raised during the public hearings. We start on four. Subheading four, committee observations. So that's the report from 4.1 until 4.7. 4.1, does it? It's an observation.
My hand is up, Chair.
Over to you, Dr. George.
Thank you, Chairperson. I did submit a letter to the committee yesterday regarding the discussion we had at the previous committee meeting. The previous committee meeting, I indicated that I was going to present a second version of my bill, minor amendments to it that were coming from the public participation process. Because as we know, the purpose of Parliament is to obviously have the participation process, to receive inputs on that, and then, of course, apply its mind and carry on with the process. So what I submitted yesterday was my letter that I said I was going to be issuing previously, detailing the change that I wanted to make to the bill. It's a very short bill, as you know. So two things that I did. Firstly, I went through, I did a letter. I detailed on that letter that the upper limit of the loan would be 30%, not 75%, and also made provision that there would be only one loan, current loan. So as you see it in front of you. So that is what I've done. And that was part of the process that my understanding is that we follow. Bearing in mind that my bill came before the committee in a year ago already. So it's been an entire year since my bill came up. And since then, the problem that we had in the economy has not got better. And also, as we know now, there's this new version that apparently is so dangerous that shuts us out from the rest of the world unfairly, as I said yesterday. But anyway, be that as it may, I have done that. So I want the committee to consider this input, because as I said before, time has moved on. I've got public participation and inputs. And so the bill that was originally before the committee a year ago has now evolved in terms of the inputs that I received. That was the one thing. The other thing that I did do, I got a schedule from the committee, which detailed all the comments that were made by some of the stakeholders, so the public and the treasury and the industry lobby, etc. And so I then responded to them. In each item, I responded to them. And I think there were very sensible responses. So just in terms of process, I just want to be clear here that I tabled my private member's bill. It went through a process of public participation. I received inputs from the public, from the treasury, etc. This committee sat down and considered inputs from the various places. And then I said, on the basis of that, I want to make a change to my bill. Because obviously we were listening, that's why you make a change, because you have a brain and so you can change your mind on various things. So what I did was amended my bill to cater for the concerns raised. And then I commented on all of the inputs as well, according to the schedule. And I've sent that also to the committee. So I am concerned that if we are looking at the bill that was there originally, we are looking at the wrong thing. So I'm not an expert on process. I'm a representative of the people. And that is where, as far as I understand, the process is to be. So I'm not quite sure whether we are considering the bill that I had originally put, or whether we are considering the amendment to that bill, which is a different version. Obviously, we know this committee has considered changes, as we did the other day with the Treasury. So I just want to be clear on process here. That is the one thing. And then the other thing is, I want to know whether we're going to go through the comments that I have made on the various inputs. Because what happens was, we had a committee, and in that committee, people came. The lobby group came, the people from the National Treasury came, and all sorts of people came, and they gave very valuable inputs, including the trade unions. And then I responded to that in that meeting, basically straight away. I was then told that I was going to get a schedule of those comments, like we do with the tax laws, for example, and then I would be able to comment on those, which I have done. So I just want to clarify a process. I mean, you know, the whole thing is that this bill has been on the table for a year. It was, well, there's going to be some other changes in the retirement industry, et cetera. But of course, we see nothing. So if you could just clarify, Chair, where we actually are in this process, given the inputs that I've now provided to you. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Dr. George. The Constitution provides in 73 in regard to the legislative process that any bill may be introduced in the National Assembly. Only a cabinet member or a deputy minister or a member or committee of the National Assembly may introduce a bill in the assembly, but only the cabinet member responsible for national financial matters may introduce the following bills in the assembly: money bill, bill provides for legislation in section 214, and then it goes on like that. And I believe, subject to the advice of the legal team, that this bill falls under 75. I'm subject to be corrected. And the Constitutional Court has made a ruling in regard to private members' bills that a bill introduced by a private member or a committee should be treated like any other bill that is introduced by the minister or the deputy minister. So that's my understanding. And in regard to processes, we have processed this bill like any other bill. It was introduced by yourself, referred to the committee. Of course, unlike the bills that come through ministers, which go through a socioeconomic impact assessment, this one hasn't. Be that as it may, we processed the bill, invited the public to make inputs, and from there, the committee research team compiled a report, the report which we are supposed to look at today. So I think now that you have written a letter to to the committee to suggest that you want to bring two issues. One is in regard to the ceiling on the loan of 30%, and the other one is in regard to that a member will not be permitted to borrow twice unless he or she has paid the first loan. I don't see any problem in that regard for you to introduce these two issues. We'll put them to the committee to decide so that it should not be like you have been prejudiced, as you have said, that with the passage of time, other issues or challenges arose in the process. So I don't see any problem with the two issues that you have brought to the fore. However, we'll subject them to the committee to discuss and decide. So I think that should be the process, but let me get the legal team to also assist.
Chairperson, thank you for that. Sorry, I just wanted to add another bit before the legal team then come in. That's fine. That sounds very sensible to me, because as I said in the previous time we met, I indicated at that meeting that I was going to make a change. So I have done what I said I would do. Obviously, we had elections in between, as you know, so that's also a reason why this bill has taken so long in the committee, I'm sure, a year. But anyway, the other thing is, though, that there was a schedule that had comments on it. I mean, Alan knows that because he's obviously got that. And in that schedule, there were comments made by stakeholders, by the Treasury, et cetera. So the commentary, obviously we're going to get to that possibly, made that I've not responded is untrue. Because what I did was, the legal department, or whoever did it in the committee, put together all the comments. They then did a schedule. And then on each of the comments, they made like a spreadsheet. And on the spreadsheet was the input. And then there was the space for comment. Now, I commented on each one of those. Specifically, I commented on the fact that the National Treasury had fundamentally misunderstood the bill, because they thought that it meant the fund was going to give the loan directly. There was going to be an immediate withdrawal from the fund. That is not so. So, you know, I don't know whether some of the comments were made were on the basis of the misunderstanding of my bill. Either it was misread or they were misinformed possibly by the lobby group. I don't know. But I mean, that's just a side issue, of course. But what I have done is I have gone through each one of those comments and I have in fact commented. Now, I'm not sure whether the committee members have got that, because it has been submitted to the committee. I mean, we only got this report, I think it was late last night or this morning, like, you know, that seems to be the regular thing. So I just want to be clear, because I want the committee to have received all the information that it needs, because obviously the committee, as we know, the committee does not report to Treasury or anybody else. We report to the people of the country who elected us. That's the most important thing. So it's all the other way around. Treasury reports to us, not us to it. The lobbyists and industry and all of those people who come in, absolutely vital and important feedback, which is greatly appreciated. They are also coming from a specific perspective. Our job as public representatives is to represent the people of our country. That's the key point I wanted to make. But I think we're on the same page, Chair, so thanks for that. I'd just like to get clarity on that also, if possible. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. George. Nolutando, are you there on the platform?
Yes, Chair, I am here.
Okay. Can you assist on issues raised by Dr. George?
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to the members and everyone in the committee. Chair, in terms of process, the committee must today pass or reject a motion of desirability on the bill that is currently before the committee. Obviously, the committee, as you were correctly saying, Chair, can consider the proposed amendments made by Dr. George in the bill. But my concern is that the bill that is before the committee, the formally introduced bill, does not have the proposed changes and the process for amending a bill when the bill is already introduced. So we must do an A list and there must be a B bill. And currently we cannot do that until the committee decides on whether the bill is desirable or not desirable. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Melitanda. Members, the procedure also in regard to this committee, because this committee as legal standing is also provided for in the rules of the National Assembly, Part 11, Rule 230. Standing Committee on Finance. It outlines the functions of, first it outlines the establishment, the composition, then the functions and powers of this committee, then also the subcommittees and consultations, then the public involvement, that we must ensure that the public is involved in accordance with the provision of the Constitution and Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act 209. So it is our understanding that, as I've said, that this bill was processed like any other bill introduced by the minister or the deputy minister and made sure that the public was involved. The public was adequately involved. They made submissions, and what is contained in the report, in my understanding, is part of what comes from the public involvement in written and oral, in the form of oral submission. And what should also come very clear, Treasury was one of those that made submissions. There should be no insinuation that whatever decision that we are going to take, we are influenced by the inputs of Treasury. Because we, as you have said, we don't report to Treasury. It is vice versa, Treasury reports to us. So in processing this bill, we should make sure that we are as objective as possible in the eyes of the public. And we should be seen to be objective and not having been influenced by Treasury, but being influenced by the public comments in general, because public participation is provided for in the Constitution, because it's the cornerstone of participatory democracy. So, Nolutando, what you are saying is that now that we have gone through the process of the public participation, they've made inputs, and we have a report here before us informed by the public participation, there's no room for now. We can't make amendments to the bill. We have to consider the report as it is, but be that as it may, the two issues that Honorable Member George is bringing to the fore for the report can be considered, not the amendment of the bill. So I think it's one thing to amend the bill. However, it is another to consider the report. So the issues that Dr. George is raising, the two issues, falls within the scope of what we are going to consider now, which is the report. And not necessarily going into the core of the bill, which is amendment. So, Nolutando, what are we supposed to do now? We have to proceed with the report which is before us, and in the process, Dr. George will raise the two issues that he has put in his letter to the committee. Is that what we're supposed to do?
That is correct, Chair. Yes, we must consider the bill that is before the committee. If you check the rules of the National Assembly, Rule 286, 4, I, it says that it provides for the process in the committee, and it says that after due deliberation, the committee must consider a motion of desirability on the subject matter of the bill, and if rejected, must immediately table the bill and its report on the bill. If the motion of the desirability is adopted, the committee must proceed to deliberate on the details of the legislation. So what is proposed by Dr. George in the letter that he sent should be considered by the committee after the committee has decided on the motion of desirability. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. That is provided for in the rules of the National Assembly, Rule 286, process in the committee. So we're going through I and J. Dr. George, are we together so that we proceed from the same wavelength?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I have clarity. It is clear. And yes, we are on the same page. Thank you for clarity, Chair.
You are welcome. Okay. Let's go back to the report. We have to do all this, honorable members, so that it should not be like, because this is a private member's bill, it is not treated like any other bill. Constitutionally, a private member has a right to table a bill, and we must make sure that it complies with the rules of the National Assembly. And the constitution, so that the National Assembly should not be found to be wanting, that we have taken a short route in processing a private member's bill. So there it is. Let me get this clear. Okay. Okay. Any comment or question?
Yes. Dr. I have George? A comment on 4.1. Yes. Yes, it is so that the that stakeholders apparently sympathised with the objectives of the bill. Everybody had a different view. Some people had other views. There was a mention that possibly there's a lot of crocodile tears being cried about the plight of people who are suffering under the pandemic, et cetera. We thought it was all going to be over by now, but now we've got another wave, et cetera. We don't know what's going to go on. So the situation that apparently some stakeholders thought were getting better actually didn't get better because of the prejudiced response to the world, to South Africa for identifying a virus that is everywhere in the world. But anyway, be that as it may, some stakeholders said that this matter was not addressed in a comprehensive way. It is not so. The truth of the matter is that I didn't say that it was going to be a comprehensive solution to the two-decade-old retirement reform conundrum. I never said that. I said that it was a very laser-sharp intervention at a particular point in time. And those circumstances have not changed. Yes, apparently there is a lot of conversation going on in NEDLAC and broader in the executive regarding pension fund reform. Yes, it is true that the former minister Mboweni and the current minister Godondwana said that there's going to be progress on retirement reform. Now, a year ago, I put this bill, and a year ago, there was the comment, well, something is happening. That's what the lobby group said and the industry said and various people said, but we haven't seen a single thing, nothing. So yes, it may not be a solution to the retirement reform fiasco, because that is not my function, but what it is, it is an intervention, and I said that all along. So I think this criticism is a little bit rich, given that we do have processes in NEDLAC, which apparently are gummed up. We do have a strong lobby group for various outcomes, etc. We do have Treasury with a particular view. So I just wanted to put that into context. That is what they said. But I do, in fact, reject that context, because the bill was never for that. It was never to resolve comprehensively our retirement fund problem. What it was about is that it was a proposal to provide for loans beyond home loans. That is all that it was. It was not a silver bullet to solve our economic crisis either. So I just want to make it clear that the context of that is not entirely correct. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Honorable Mabiletso.
Thank you, Chair. On that issue that Honorable Judge is talking about now, the first one, that it did not address the issues in a comprehensive manner. You know, when I read the bill also, I think no detail on tax implication of the amendment bill. Obtaining a loan by seeking a guarantee against a pension fund will have tax implications. In instances where the loan guarantees are called and a member defaults. The amendment bill provides no detail with regard to this, which can be damaging to the very financial distressed person who seeks the loan. Furthermore, tax implications of using a guarantee for up to, 35% of the members' fund assets will result in an adjustment to the tax regime, which would require a separate money bill. The current tax regime requires that any pay cut from a pension fund, and in the case of the amendment bill, in the event of a default, are taxed according to the withdrawal tax table. Such payouts from retirement funds are taxable since the contributions are made before tax is paid. Any retirement fund assets that are withdrawn to honor the loan guarantee would be subject to tax. These are matters where a money bill is required, and this falls outside the ambit of a private member's legislation. I think maybe, you know, when they were talking about it doesn't address issues of a comprehensive manner, we should consider this as well. Thank you, Chen.
Thanks. Honorable Mrolong, then Honorable George.
Thank you very much, Chair. Okay. I just want to find out whether we are at a point where we are deliberating. I thought that we are making committee observations. Of course, committee observations will vary from the submission made by Honorable George. And my view is that we need to be able to draw a distinction between the bill, the suggested bill presented by Honorable George, his views on the bill, and the general observations of the committee. So I wanted to check whether we're at a point where we are discussing, we are deliberating generally on these issues, or that we are making observations as a consequence of the deliberations which may have ensued in the past. Thank you very much.
We are deliberating on the basis of what is contained in subheading 4. So you are correct. It is in regard to the committee observations. And as Nolu Thando has guided before, if you look at Rule 286 in the rules of the National Assembly, we have to make sure that we comply with the INJ, which says that after due deliberation, we must consider a motion of desirability on the subject matter of the bill, and if rejected, must immediately table the bill and its report on the bill. So at the end, we'll have to consider a motion. So I felt that let's discuss what is under observations and then put the question before the committee, whether it is desirable to proceed with the bill or the bill gets rejected. And be that as it may, we still have to compile a report because it says that if the motion of the desirability is adopted, the committee must proceed to deliberate on the details of the legislation. But now we're just dealing with the report. So I thought we'll quickly go through this and then put the question before the committee.
Okay, can I come back then after Honorable George? Or you want me to proceed?
If you have a follow-up, you can.
No. I now follow the sequence of the discussions, and I also wish to concur that the stakeholders would have regarded the bill as inadequate because it did not address a variety of aspects. And chief amongst them, in my view, is that there's no stated mechanism to operate the loan scheme and provide protection. Chair, on the loan provision, the amendment bill does not provide mechanisms for the operation of the loan scheme. The bill is devoid of evidence that competitive interest would automatically be granted by lenders if the loans are pension fund backed. But more importantly, I think we are acutely aware of the fact that any loan default could result in guarantees for the loans being called. So the risk of longer-term financial consequences of the proposed loan guarantees outweighs any short-term benefits. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Dr. George. Then we move to the second observation.
Thank you, Chair. I do appreciate the inputs of my colleagues. It does, however, sound like a script. Now, that's the whole point that I made, was that I got a schedule. And on that schedule, it indicated the comments made by various stakeholders, like we do with the taxation laws and every other law. I then commented on those items. Now, I don't know whether the committee's seen that or not. So I did that. Now, if I know we don't want to have a whole long deliberation because we are looking at the committee observations. But if the committee's observations are informed or are informed by misinformation or incorrect technical incorrect information, I have to correct it. It would be negligent of me not to do that. The two issues that were raised about the taxation and there's no mechanism in the bill. Well, I'm sure everybody does know that the law provides already for pension-backed loans for home loans. The mechanism is there. The taxation laws do not need to be amended. Yes, there were a few technical issues that were raised by the Treasury, etc. What, you know, that's what they did, and the stakeholders did as well. But what they are not informing the committee about is the fact that the mechanism is there. The tax laws do not need to be amended. So, I mean, wherever the script comes from, or you know, whatever, who's informing that technically, I do not know. But certainly, I have every right to be heard in terms of the correctness, the technical correctness. Now, the stakeholder says it was not comprehensive. We've covered that point where, yes, it was not supposed to solve the entire retirement conundrum. But if they are claiming that there is no mechanism for these loans, it's untrue. That the tax laws need to be changed is untrue. That there's going to be a problem with a loan because we've got the National Credit Act, etc. So, I mean, I just want to be clear. My inputs on those technical items, I don't know whether they've actually been seen or considered. And I think that that's a material issue because I would really hate the committee to be making a decision with half of the information or on a misinformed basis because we know the Treasury's position already. The Treasury misunderstood my bill fundamentally, either because they misread it or because they were misled by the lobby group. I don't know. That's the one thing. The other thing is that if the committee is then getting information that is not correct, making decisions on that, they are letting down the people, and that would be terrible. So it is my obligation to raise that issue, that the two issues raised, the tax issue raised, is not an issue. A whole lot of issues were raised. The only point of this was to kill the bill because there is a strong lobby who is very worried that there would be leakage from the pension fund system and that it would not be under management and that it would then impact on fees, etc. Who knows? I don't know. But that's the problem. So as has been said before by the Treasury, we have to be cautious in the liquor industry and the tobacco industry of a very strong lobby towards a certain outcome. So we need to be even more careful here because we know the strength of that lobby in this particular instance. So I just want to put it onto the table. I just want it recorded that the tax issue is not an issue. It's become an issue because, I don't know, somebody decided to make it an issue. There is, in fact, a mechanism. There are members who can, in fact, go to a pension fund, get a surety for a home loan. They can pay it back or they can default on it. And if they do, there is, in fact, a mechanism. So what's being read into the record here is incorrect. And I would be negligent if I didn't tell my colleagues that the information that they have may well not be correct and that whoever had informed them is clearly not getting it right. But anyway, I've said enough on 4.1. I have nothing else to say. Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Church. My understanding was that we are meeting here as a committee to consider the bill as it is provided for in the rules of the National Assembly. But if ever there are other interests from somewhere else, we can't stop people to have interest or corporates to have interest. But can we stick to the process? And also, I hear you mentioning Treasury time and again. We are not a subcommittee of Treasury. We are a full committee of the National Assembly provided for in the rules. So I think let's engage in a spirit of being colleagues. I think it should be clear, comrades, members. This is the Constitution of the Republic that I'm from time to time guided by the legal team looking at as to what is provided for in terms of the bills. Also before me, I've got the rules of the National Assembly. So I have to make sure, because like where I am, I'm like a presiding officer, that whatever I do, I'm guided by the Constitution of the Republic and also the rules of the National Assembly. So if ever there are other interests from somewhere, that is something else. And what we are doing now, we are doing it in terms of 286. Anybody who have got this book before him or her, open page 286, sub-item or subsection I and J. So that's what we are trying to do, George, so that we make sure that at the end, whatever the decision of the committee, it should comply with the Constitution and the rules of the National Assembly. Other interested parties, whatever they said during public hearings and what they continue to say now out there, we can't stop them. We are in a democratic dispensation. So I will plead that we engage in terms of what is contained in the report, allow members to express themselves, and then we come to the section where we have to deal with the desirability of the, I mean, motion of desirability. But I felt I can't just put a motion that let's vote for the report based on what? The report, the motion should be voted based on the discussions that we are going through now, so that it should not be like, as I've said before, that we have been very subjective in processing this report. I see Dr. Tope is on the platform.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson and members. I just wanted to clarify something with regards to the response document that Dr. George is talking about. The matrix of comments was shared with members on the 23rd of August before the committee held the meeting on the 24th. but the responses from Dr. George were only sent this morning. So that's why they were not accommodated in the report. But it was said in that meeting on the 24th of August that Dr. George needed to submit the responses. I just needed to clarify that since the 24th of August, they were only received this morning. And the letter that he wrote, because we received it yesterday when we were still compiling the report, there is a paragraph that is included in the report under paragraph 2 at the top, which states the new amendments that he wanted to be effected. So I just wanted to clarify those issues there.
Okay. Thanks, Dr. Sloppen. Can we proceed to 2?
Chairperson, please, on a point of order here, I just want to clarify this issue regarding the responses. When we had our previous engagement, I was informed that I was going to get a matrix. I asked for that matrix several times. I was also not given a deadline for a response to that matrix. And I was also not told when this committee was going to next deliberate on my bill. So I only saw the agenda to this committee very recently. I think it might have been a week ago or so. I had to ask for the matrix several times so that I could respond to it, which I did. Now, if we're going to get all hyped up about the fact that this was received only this morning, I didn't submit it this morning. I submitted my letter yesterday, and I submitted my comments yesterday. Because, as you know, it's a lot of work that needs to be done. So let's just be clear here. I am not the person that held up this process. We met as a committee. We went through a lot of things, and a lot of people raised a lot of things. I then was told there was going to be a schedule, which I waited for a long time. We had an election in between as well, but that didn't stop the process. So when I became aware that this committee was going to be discussing this today, with very short notice, you can ask the committee when we were notified about it, I made sure that I had my inputs in, and also that I had commented, because we know these reports. The other day, we got a report on the taxation laws, very complex taxation laws, in the morning, probably about 7 o'clock in the morning, and the committee was at 9. And so we had to read through everything so we could participate effectively. So I take exception to that, frankly. I just want to make it clear that the committee understands that when I got the matrix, I worked on it and I responded to it, and it got here in time. The fact that it's not included in this report, it could have been done yesterday. So I'm very sorry. I'm not accepting that. Thank you.
Okay. Let's proceed to 2. Under committee observations, do we have comments under 2? Okay.
Chairperson, I'm not going to start a deliberation. I also want to say that there's been an explanation of that. The National Credit Act would actually apply. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Let's proceed to 3. Honorable Nkomo.
Thank you very much, Chair. Please excuse my voice. I've got a bit of flu. Chair, on issues of social, economic, or financial impact, on matters to do with personal finances of those who hold pension funds, there should be a social, economic, or financial impact study that accompanies the amendment bill. So no such study has been submitted to Parliament to support the amendment bill, and the Parliament has been asked to have a decision without necessary evidence placed before it. So that will be submission on 4.3. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Nkomo. Let's proceed to 4. Okay.
Chairperson, says there the committee further that the interplay of tax issues, the bill may be required, the introduction of a money bill, etc. That is not so. It does not require a money bill and does not require an amendment to the Income Tax Act. Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to the Constitution and make sure that we have got clarity as to which category does this bill belong. Nolitando, is this a Section 75 bill or is it a money bill as described under 73?
Chair, Section 77 of the Constitution tells us what a money bill is, and it says a bill is a money bill if the bill appropriates money, imposes national taxes, levies, duties or surcharges, abolishes or reduces or grants exemptions from any national taxes, levies, duties or surcharges, or authorizes direct charges against the National Revenue Fund, except a bill envisaged in Section 214 authorizing direct charges. Okay, based on what the Constitution says, the bill in front of the committee is not a money bill. If members could check in the bill just below the memorandum on the objects of the bill, it says the bill should be classified as a Section 75 bill as it is not a money bill, or a bill envisaged in terms of Section 76 of the Constitution. So the bill is a Section 75 bill. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, so 4.4 should be expunged from the report, because if it's a Section 75 bill, the Constitution defines what that bill is all about, and it's says when the National Assembly passes a bill other than a bill to which the procedure set out 74, 76, the bill must be referred to the NCOP and dealt with in accordance with the following procedure: pass the bill, amendments, reject the bill, and so on and so on. So it's a long section, that's 75. So it's a Section 75 bill. So let's get it clear. It's not a Section 77 bill. Okay.
Chairperson?
Honorable Mrolong.
Mrolong, yeah, maybe just a clarity. Section 75 bills are usually bills that either have, and this, I think I can be corrected on it, that do not have effect on provinces. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Can I then ask a question? Given the fact that this bill affects, or rather that members of the provincial legislature belong to the same pension fund as members of the National Assembly, members of the National Council of Provinces, what effect will this bill have on members of the provincial legislature?
Thank you, Chair. The way to take a bill or to decide whether a bill is a Section 75 or a Section 76 bill is provided for in the Constitution. So Section 75 bills are bills that do not affect provinces, and that means those are the bills that are not provided for in Schedule 4 of the Constitution. So in the Constitution, we have two schedules. We have functional areas of concurrent national and provincial legislative competence. So it gives us a list of those areas. So if a bill falls in one of those areas, then the bill should be tagged as a Section 75 bill or 76 bill. If it doesn't, then the bill is a Section 75 bill. It is not, we do not determine that by whether the bill is going to affect people living in that province, but it's determined by functional areas that are found in Schedule 4 of the Constitution. So that is how we decide whether a bill is a Section 75 or a Section 76 bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Are you clarified, Honorable Mrolo?
I'm not necessarily clarified, sir. So what we're suggesting is that the way this bill works will not affect members of the provincial legislature who belong to the same pension fund. So there would be a disjuncture with respect to how this pension fund is or how members of the provincial legislature compared to NCOP members and MPs or MPs in general terms relate with the pension fund. I just want to I'm a bit confused if I can be clarified on that issue.
Thank you, Chair. The bill, I'm sorry if I was not clear before. So the Constitution gives us a way of tagging bills. We call the process tagging. So that is the process of deciding whether the bill should be proceeded by Parliament in terms of Section 75 or a Section 76 bill. A Section 75 bill, it does not mean it does not affect everyone who is living in South Africa. It means that the subject matter that the bill is dealing with is not an area of concurrent national and provincial legislative competence. Those areas are stated in Schedule 4. So if the bill, for instance, was dealing with administration of indigenous forests or agriculture or airports or animal control and all the other things that are listed in Schedule 4 of the Constitution, then this bill would have been dealt with in terms of Section 76 of the Constitution. But because pension funds are not in Schedule 4 of the Constitution, they are a matter of national competence, meaning that they should be dealt with in terms of Section 75 of the Constitution. It does not mean that those members would not be affected. Everyone will be affected, even the people living in different provinces that will be affected by this bill. But that is not how we decide in terms of how Parliament should proceed or deal with a bill that is before Parliament. Thank you.
Thanks. Under 286, sub-rule 5, it says that the committee may propose an amendment that changes the classification of Section 75 to a Section 76 or a Section 76 to a 76 only if the JTM is of the view that the bill as amended is unlikely to lead to unmanageable procedural complications. I think for now, the JTM has tagged this bill as a Section 75. So if we have to change it to be 76, we have to go through the procedure as outlined in sub-rule 5. So that's that, Honorable Mrolo. But as of now, it is a 75 bill as tagged by the JTM.
I'm covered, sir.
Okay, thanks. Let's move to we're on what? 4. Okay, let's move to 5. Dr. George.
Thanks, Chairperson. We have touched on it briefly before, But I just want to make the point that when we had the previous deliberations on this bill and many stakeholders gave inputs and in that meeting, and I responded immediately as best I could in that very meeting to the comments made, especially the comment made that the 75% may well be too high. And as you know, and as you've said, Chairperson, that the point is of legislation in South Africa, so many people fought for democracy for, is that when you have legislation, you actually engage with stakeholders and you get their feedback, which is exactly what we did. And then when you get the feedback, you may very well change your view or your proposal based on the feedback, because it means you've actually been listening, because that's what participatory democracy is about. It's not by saying, well, give me inputs and then I throw it in the rubbish bin. Give me inputs so I can think about it. I can process it. I can acknowledge I have received it. And then I can make up my mind as to whether it's impacted or not. So that's the process that was followed here. At that very meeting, and it was reported in the newspaper as well, that I said I would amend that percentage, and I have subsequently done that. I was led to believe that it was possible to do that simply and easily. I remember at the time the question was asked, is that it's a version B or something like that. Anyway, time moves on. I submitted my letter and it was received in time. You will recall that I think it was Tuesday, and perhaps on many other occasions previous to that, we have been requested by usually the Treasury for the taxation laws to make a change, either to correct something or to change a date. We actually did that on Tuesday. We changed the year on a particular part of the bill. So that is my understanding, and I do not think I am wrong on that. So I do think that it is possible, and it should be so, that my request to make the adjustment should be considered favorably. Because we've got precedent of that in the committee. It is perfectly legal. And I have made my request. And it's a very small one. So I just want to state that for the record. Because I do think that that amendment that I was under the impression and led to believe would be perfectly fine to do should be considered. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Dr. George. Honorable Mhlonishwa Skhosa.
No, yeah, Ngiyathokoza. Sihlalo Hlonipekileyo. And greetings to all the honorable members and all the participants. Yeah, Chair, I don't know whether I'm lost or what, because at the beginning of the meeting, I think there was a discussion as to whether do we consider the bill in its current form, or do we take into consideration the issues that Honorable Dr. George has sent yesterday, which at the moment, those things are not part of the bill. And I think after getting an advice at the meeting, which also Dr. George considered to it, that we are considering the bill in its current form. So, but I'm worried because he keep on coming in and referring to those issues which are not part of the bill in its current form. To say, no, yesterday I written a letter in the last meeting, I said this and this and this. And I think it then confuses me as to whether do we still, as per the decision of the meeting, consider the bill in its current form, or do we take those issues that he's referring to into consideration? Because those are things that are not in the bill that is before the committee. Because I think perhaps the other option might before Dr. George to withdraw the bid and go and work on it and insert those new things and make some amendments, being influenced obviously by the inputs of the stakeholders as he keeps on referring to them, changing the issue of 75% to 30% and then bring it afresh, because it doesn't help. Now we are considering the bid in its current form, but he keeps on referring to things that are not in the bid. So I think it's going to be very difficult at the end of the day for us to take a decision, because we are going to take a decision based on what is in the bid, whereas he keeps on referring to things that are not in the bid. Thanks.
Sir Tokos, Shonisho. Honorable Mrolo.
Well, I think my concern is almost similar to what is raised by Honorable Kosana. It's the fact that there's been a wide range of consultation on these matters. In the first instance, the bill was sponsored by Honorable Dr. George, and the committee following consultations must then deliberate on the motion of desirability. And my discomfort is what Honorable Kosana raises. And I have absolutely no qualms with the fact that there are issues that may, there are amendments that may have been effected before this meeting. However, the committee must be at liberty to, on its own, engage on the bill as it is. Of course, notwithstanding the fact that there may have been amendments. And therefore, my suggestion is that you can, therefore, in the course of a discussion that is ensuing, propose yourself changes to what we are discussing as your own bill. Because we are discussing your own bill with all the amendments that you've effected, bearing in mind the consultations which have ensued and the comments made by the general public. So if we were to insert new amendments at this stage, or if the sponsor was to do that at this stage, it would seem quite cumbersome for me, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Nolutando and members, can you advise here, Nolutando, in 286G, it says that the committee may consult the JTM on whether any amendments to the bill proposed in the committee may affect the classification of the bill or may render the bill constitutional or procedurally out of order. H, may not propose an amendment that affects the classification of the bill except as provided in sub-rule 5 and joint rule 163, or renders the bill constitutional or procedurally out of order within the meaning of joint rule 161. When we call for public hearings, there was a different provision in regard to the cap as to how much can the member borrow the money from the pension scheme and the other clause. What does it mean now that we are in the process of looking at the bill, going through the report that the member proposes amendments, taking into consideration what is provided for in G and H?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, the first step that now we need to take is to decide on the motion of desirability, as I've already stated, Chair. Unfortunately, the letter that was sent by Dr. George cannot is not amendments to the bill. It's just a letter. In terms of process, the letter, obviously, those amendments may influence the committee on how the committee now decides on the motion of desirability, because then after then we can formally change the bill to a bill with the proposed amendments. But currently, the committee has to consider the bill that was introduced in the House and that was referred to the committee. That is where we are at the moment. Even if the committee passes the motion of desirability on the bill, and then the committee decides to incorporate the amendments that are proposed by Dr. George, those amendments would not influence the taking of the bill, because they are just amendments that reduces the amount that a member can use as a guarantee to the pension fund. It does not change the subject matter of the bill, or it does not, the provisions of the bill will not substantially affect provinces. So the amendments would not influence the taking of the bill or change the taking of the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Honorable Vessels.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm largely covered by what Nolutandu now referred to, and I think it is important to keep in mind that when we consider in the process the motion of desirability, we consider the fact if the bill is in its form, but not in its detail, desirable, and if we can go ahead with then going clause by clause and going in the process of then affecting any amendments by the committee that comes from the public participation and any inputs that we've received. So I don't think the amendments proposed currently by Dr. George is now important. What is important is the intent of the bill and the memorandum of the object of the bill. That is what is important. And then the actual details as the limits with regards to the guarantee and those type of specifics can be amended by the committee if we then adopt the motion of desirability. So it shouldn't be a stumbling block if there's now certain details or certain specifics that we don't agree with. It's now about the object of the bill, and then we proceed to say, can we then amend, or do we then take into consideration certain of the inputs from the public participation? And that is how I understand the process. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Akhbara Vessels. Dr. George, then we move to 4.6.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, Nolutandu and Honourable Vessels, I think, has covered what I wanted to say. My legal advice is that the motion of desirability is about the bill in principle, and that it can be amended then either on the floor or in the committee. The passing of a motion of desirability doesn't mean that the bill can't be amended. So I think that's clarified everything for the committee, which is good, and for me in particular, because I think that's the key thing. The whole point here is that the issue that the committee is looking at is not even the minutiae of the detail. It's whether we should proceed down this road in terms of my proposal to alleviate the plight of the most desperate in our country. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Dr. George. So we'll come to the proposed amendment as and when we deal with the clauses in the bill. For now, we're looking at the motion of desirability. Hence, we are going through what is in the observation, so that when we come to that, we should have given the report serious attention. 4.6, any comment?
Yes, Chair. I would like to know who has not been responded to. Subsequent to my bill, as you know, I got thousands of comments on my bill, literally thousands of inputs to my office, and we responded. I also responded in the House, in the committee, when various industry bodies and lobbyists, et cetera, asked questions. I did respond. I actually had meetings that were requested from me by various interested stakeholders, which I had. So it says that no formal written responses by the sponsor to many public comments, some et cetera. I think that we need to know the detail of that, to whom, who was not responded to. So yeah, that's my input on that one. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Dr. George, for that clarity. So assist the committee secretariat with that information. For seven.
Gets in. I don't think that we can just ignore the fact that there is this comment, that there were no formal responses given by the sponsor of the bill. If we can just get the origin of this comment, where it comes from, because if Dr. George, as he has already stated, has responded to a number of public comments, and there are notes to the effect that those public comments were not responded to, it means there must have been individual stakeholders who feel that they may not have been responded to. So I think that at some point we need to be given clarity. It may not be here, Chair. But we need to get a sense of really what transpired, whether all comments that were made and or questions were responded to adequately by the public. I don't think it's a matter we can just brush off, especially because it is part of the observations. Thank you very much.
Okay. Secretariat, research team, do you want to clarify before I take members?
Yes, Chairperson, if I may come in. On the 23rd of August, response matrix, it was not a response matrix, but it was a comments matrix because it didn't have responses. It was sent to all the members of the committee. That was on the 23rd of August, including Dr. George. And it was discussed on the 24th of August in the committee. And that's the document that had a space for responses, where Dr. George was asked to comment on those. It was sent via email. And the response, I've asked Alan, he said, Dr. George only responded yesterday, late in the evening yesterday, and he only sent the email to everyone in the committee this morning. If you can check your emails, then you'll see that document. I've just checked it now. But at the time that we wrote and submitted that report, there was no formal written response to the comments that were discussed on the 24th of August, 2021, more than 3 months ago. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Dr. Sloper. Dr. George, have you complied as it is stated by Dr. Thorpe?
Yes, Chairperson. I think we mustn't speak across purposes here. So the point is this. Dr. Thorpe is correct. There was a matrix and it was put together. I have responded to that matrix and he is correct that response was received yesterday. And the reason why it was received yesterday is as I have explained. I said, this process is not simple. Firstly, I put my private member's bill into the process. It then got a lot of comments. Now, those comments are not the same comments that Dr. Slope is talking about. These are different comments because people wrote directly to me, for example. They wrote to the speaker, they wrote to everybody, right? There was engagement at that point, some engagement, right? Then it came to the committee. It took time to get to the committee, as these things do. The committee then had a discussion, deliberation, etc., and stakeholders raised issues, raised from the Treasury to the industry, etc., individuals, they all came to the committee and they made their inputs. At that committee, I responded as well to some of, I thought maybe many, but you know, I responded as best I could immediately in that committee. Then there was this matrix that was put together that Dr. Slope is talking about. That matrix needed quite a lot of thought, because it is not a simple matter when people say that you need to amend the tax laws, etc., when they don't have to be amended, etc. That is in fact in the hands of the committee. Yes, it only came yesterday, but as I said before, I didn't know when the committee was going to meet again. So when I saw that it was going to do that, I ensured that it was there on time, because we know that a lot of things happen. We've been processing the medium-term budget policy statement at a very short time. So a lot has been happening. So the facts are, yes, this document then was issued in August sometime. I do not recall exactly when. I have responded to it. I have responded to it in time. Now, I get the fact that the report may have been written, I don't know, yesterday afternoon, whatever. However, I don't think that that's an issue. I never had a deadline. I never had a deadline to say, you must submit it by this particular date. My understanding of this process is that the information that the committee needs should be with the committee when it needs it. And that is why I wrote the letter yesterday, because it's very simple to understand. That is why I submitted my comments. And yes, it is correct, Dr. Slope says, that everybody who has made comment was placed into particular categories. So if you look at the matrix, you've got a number of the stakeholders, the comment that they made, and then a space for my comment. Now that is done. So I think that's just the point that needs to be clarified. So the inputs or the comments that need to be made have in fact been made. There may well be a timing issue because it was received yesterday. However, as I said before, why does that have to hopefully not prejudice the people of South Africa who I represent? It shouldn't prejudice them, because as we know, this committee is very busy. And there have been many times, including this week, where we've received reports in the morning or late at night, which we have to read and prepare for the meeting at 9 o'clock the next day and be able to be coherent. So I can understand why there's been this slight mismatch here, whereas there may well be a view that the comment was not there. The comment was in fact there. I have in fact commented. And I think that's the important thing to note. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Honorable Skosana?
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, no, I remember very well on the day of the meeting when we were supposed to consider the responses from Honorable Dr. George, that the metrics that was there, it was captured all the comments from the stakeholders. But on the side where we're supposed to have responses by the sponsor of the bill, that side was blank. There were no responses from Dr. George in that meeting. And what he did, he kept on responding verbally to some of the issues, not all of them, to some of the issues. When we asked, then he responded verbally. And then we advised that he should respond to all the issues that were raised by the stakeholders. So my understanding is that he was supposed to give those responses and bring back that report to the meeting. Not unless he is saying he responded to the stakeholders individually. But I don't think that thing it assists if that is the case, because
this bill is of a public interest. And if stakeholder X has raised a certain issue, the public and ourselves as a committee would like to know what is the response to that particular issue that was raised by stakeholder X. But if Dr. George decides to write direct to that stakeholder and respond to them, we as the committee and the general public wouldn't know the response to that particular issue, because it's an issue that we also have an interest on, and the public in general, they do have an interest on. So our understanding was that the responses will still come back to the committee, because in actual fact, the responses were supposed to be in that meeting, as it is normally the practice that when you consider the bill, especially on public hearings, you meet with stakeholders, they would raise the issues, raise an issue, then we would schedule another day for the responses. And on the day of the responses, we will get a document, that metric that will have those issues captured that were raised by stakeholders, and they've also have the responses written already before you arrive at the meeting, so that then the response of the bill will take us through the responses to the comments that were made by the stakeholders. And if they want to make follow-ups, they will make follow-ups, or if as committee members want to also comment based on those responses versus the concern raised by stakeholders, we will be able to comment. So that process did not happen, because on the meeting of considering the responses, there were no written responses. He only responded to two or three issues while we were raising them in the meeting, but many comments that were there were no responses, and we advised that no, he must go and sit down and work on the written response, and that did not happen as far as I know. Honorable Chair, thank you very much.
On a point of order, that is not correct.
Dr. George, I'll come back to you. Can you allow other members to make their comments? Honorable Mabiletsa, and then Honorable Murolo.
I think Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member, we should really take note and remember that our job is to represent the people of South Africa. And whilst we are busy deliberating and discussing, I think the people, you know, should be aware and take note that those seeking to access the portion of their pension fund are overwhelming those who are in financial distress. And, you know, our people should really look at this matter and know that the problem of the amendment bill is that it prescribes a loan facility, which is only going to place the applicant, it's going to place them in further financial distress due to the interest rate, you know, the interest rate that they are going to acquire in time that will be levied upon them by the lender. This therefore favors the lender. They must know that, the public must know that, that in future, this will only favor the lender, often a bank or other financial institution, to accumulate while the very financial distressed individual is pushed further into debt. This is undesirable, and maybe especially in the context of South Africa, going to generate further inequality, which is in itself undesirable. We can say whatever we are saying here, but the public should know that when you borrow or when you get a loan, you must pay. If you don't pay in time, they must know that, they must remember the interest rates that they're going to acquire in time. By the time they go out for pension, that time, those years, they will be left with nothing, but they will be paying all the interest. All their money will be swallowed by the interest rates that they would have acquired. Please, let us take note of that. Whatever we are discussing, whether you know it was brought back yesterday or today, but the public needs to know that the bottom line is you are going to get this money, but you'll have to, if you don't pay it, remember about the interest rate. Take note of that. I submit.
Thanks, Honorable Mabiletsa. Honorable Murolo.
Well, just 30 seconds. So the sponsor of the bill knows quite well that they carry the burden of responding to the comments. And you see, this matter is material because it borders on prejudice. most of the arguments that Dr. George has advanced, he himself has said that they are also based on public comments. So, and that is why he used the expression persuasion, that he was persuaded. So the argument is that he should have responded, and members of the committee should have been exposed to his responses, so that as we engage with these issues in this platform, then we are quite mindful of what the comments of the public are and what the responses of Dr. George. I know he makes a point that he did not have you know, time limitations within which to work because it was not prescribed on him. But as a sponsor of the motion or of the bill, he knows that he carries the burden of responding and responding timely to comments and making sure that those responses are exposed to the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. George.
Well, exactly as Honorable Morolong says, I have responded. That is the point. And also, as Honorable Mabaletsa said, is let's actually stick to the point of what we are trying to discuss here. But it's very important, though, for me to say, I have responded. There is a process in the committee. I do not schedule the meetings, etc. The point is, we had a meeting and I responded. There was then a matrix done to which I have responded. So I have responded. That is the key thing. But let me go to the comment made by Honorable Mabaletsa. Obviously, she is correct that a loan facility is not for everybody, because the National Credit Act must also kick into place and the Board of Trustees must decide whether it would make it available like they do with home loans. So the way that it would work, and let me just clarify the huge misunderstanding that the National Treasury seems to have had, is that if a member, well, firstly, if the bill passes, the pension fund trustees will decide whether they would want to make a facility available or not. So that's the first hurdle. Do they or don't they want to make it available? And some funds will not, and others will. Then, if the fund does in fact make a facility available where members can use a portion limited to 30% of their pension fund for surety for a loan, the money does not get disinvested from the pension fund. It remains in the fund. There is a loan from a lender, and from a lender. They then pay it back. That's the point. Now, the National Credit Act was written to make sure that people don't get over-indebted. And it is one of the comments that were made in the matrix, which I've responded to, is that on the one hand, there was an argument to say that this is going to bring the whole financial system down because everybody's going to take money out of the pension fund and the system is going to collapse, nobody's going to make profit, whatever. That is not so. Then on the other hand, there was another comment, which is in the matrix as well, that said only a few people would benefit from this. Therefore, it's not a good idea. So the fact is, this provision does not make everybody go and take a loan. The pension fund is not forced to take a loan. And the member may not be eligible for a loan. And that is the principle behind it. So anyway, that's the point that I wanted to make. Thank you very much.
Okay, while you are still in the platform, we must get 4.6 correct so that it is properly recorded. Have you, Dr. George, made formal written responses, and have you submitted them to the committee secretariat?
I have, yes, Chair.
Alan, do we have the record that the Honourable Member, Dr. George, has submitted the formal written submission?
Yes, Chair. As stated earlier, I received it last night, and I only sent it out to the committee this morning.
So, Dr. George, it is on record that you submitted the formal written responses last night. Is it so?
That is correct. Yes, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Alan and Dr. Sope, let's correct 4.6. Dr. George has made a formal written submissions and mentioned the date. I think that is quite important. Can we please do so?
No, the Chair.
Okay. I see there is a hand of Mr. Momo here. Do you want to clarify something, Mr. Momo, without engaging in a debate?
Yes, Chair. No, I'm very careful not to engage in a debate. Thank you, Chair. And with your permission, if I can just make one or two points, because And obviously, clearly, I think we recognize that this is for the members to decide and certainly not the Treasury. So we certainly respect the process. I think, Chair, just, you know, I wanted to just make the point that I think much has been said. And, you know, I would appeal to Honorable George. I think when he's made comments to the Treasury, he's kind of been pretty insulting. And I think we can have this discussion without sort of raising those issues in the sense that, you know, there's lobbying and we've yielded to your lobbying and or we've not understood the points we've made. I think the point to this is that whilst there has been maybe technically a response on the issues raised, I don't think that Honorable George has really answered the question sufficiently and dealt with all the risks. And I think that those are the issues of concern to us as Treasury, which, with your permission, we could raise, but I won't raise it yet. But I just wanted to make that point, Chair, because we could come in on these issues should you want further information. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Momo. Let's restrict you to that so that it should not be like Treasury came to the committee and influenced members to take the decision in whatever way. That was for clarity purposes. It's not part of the debate, because later somebody can challenge us. But we do have to consult from time to time because we are not in caucus now as a committee. We are in full session. So if we do need clarity from parliamentary support team, we do so, like we have Alan, Dr. Thorpe, and the entire team assisting us with clarity, seeking questions. Because Parliament is not only members, it also includes the parliamentary officials, like we have Nolu Thando here in the platform from the legal service. So it should be understood that we can't, when we need clarity, not request an official to provide that clarity. But of course, officials must be very careful to draw the line and make sure that they don't get into a debate with members. So thanks, Momo. Who's next? You can take the hand down, Momo, and then we go to Dr. George, then Murolong.
Thank you, Chairperson. I do regret that the Treasury feels that I have insulted them. I certainly do not believe that I have. I merely pointed out that there was a material misunderstanding of what I was proposing. So I would like to just place that on record. Also, I'd like to say, I think it's common knowledge that I do hold the Treasury in very high regard. So I really don't want there to be any misunderstanding. I hold the Treasury in very high regard. I value their technical expertise, and I always listen to everything they have to say with great interest. So just to make sure that that is clear, I have no beef with the Treasury, and I certainly do not wish to insult the Treasury. So I just want that to be placed on record. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Dr. George. Honorable Murolong.
Chair, I know that we've sort of partially closed this discussion on the responses by Honorable George to public comments. I would like to satisfy myself, Chair. I'm quite stubborn when it comes to some of these process issues. We are fully aware of the fact that this the response is albeit late, and the fact that we had not seen them as a committee do not border on prejudice, and that these are not material issues. So that I leave this meeting at the end of it satisfied that that we had gone through great lengths to satisfy ourselves that a process has been observed to the latter. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Morolong. Alan, do we have the written responses distributed to or forwarded to members? I saw the letter where Dr. George is proposing amendments on the cap.
Yes, Chair. I sent the matrix. It's the same matrix that the committee discussed sometime in August. Just the one that I sent this morning includes the comments from Dr. George. So that is in the, I can put it up on the screen if you so wish, but it's just in the last column that he responds to the submission. And that I sent this morning.
Okay. No problem. I think let's stick to what we are doing here to process the report, because the process requires that we have to embark on a due deliberation. So we don't have to take shortcuts. The rules are very clear that when we come to considering the motion of desirability, we should have gone through a due deliberation of the report. So hence, I'm trying to be very careful that whatever paragraph that we discuss, all of us are at the same wavelength. So as long as you have sent the comments to members, I think that suffices, because the paragraph was giving the impression that Dr. George has not submitted the formal written responses. So let's correct 4.6. And then 4.7. Any comment on 4.7? Okay. It doesn't look like there is any member who will want to make a comment on 4.7. 5.1. The committee to add its recommendations on 1st December. The motion of desirability will be drafted based on the outcomes of the deliberations in this regard. Okay. I think we've sufficiently processed the report as it is provided for in the rules of the National Assembly. And we have to now deal with the okay, Honorable Nkomo, before I proceed.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Sorry for taking you back a bit. Dr. George mentioned something about the pension fund would not be affected should the loan be provided to members. So I just want to know, he mentioned something about not everyone will qualify. Let's say hypothetically, if everybody who applies for this loan, they qualify based on the National Credit Act. What are contingency measures or backup strategies in case everybody qualifies and unable to pay back the money? Will it not affect the pension fund payout of members? Lastly, Chair, I think this bill has got unintended consequences. An assess of the impact of the pension fund backed loans on indebtedness and long-term savings has not been made by the amendment bill. The very indebtedness that Parliament will seek to alleviate can, because of the nature of the mechanism advancing amendment bill, a loan scheme end up manufacturing further indebtedness. According to me, this loan, this bill, amendment bill, Chairperson, is really undesirable. Thank you.
Okay, let's deal with the first question that you raised, and then we'll come to the desirability. Dr. George?
Thank you, Chairperson. It is a good question, but as I explained in terms of the mechanism and the way it would work, is that not every pension fund would actually make the facility available. So that would be the first hurdle, because as we know with current home loan situation, not every fund permits that. So that would be the first hurdle. The trustees would say, do we want to make it available to our members or not? And they would make the decision based on, I suppose, the profile of the members or the industry they're in, I don't know. But that would be for them to decide. What this bill does, it just makes the facility possibility available. It doesn't mean that it will in fact happen. So that's the first hurdle that you have in terms of the trustees deciding, no, we are not going to permit our members to use the surety facility. So that would eliminate a portion. Then you would have a situation where I'm a member of a pension fund. I've got money in my fund and I want to use the surety. I go to a lender and I say, I'm a member of a pension fund and I want to make a loan. I don't know, whatever, maybe it's 5,000 Rand or 10, I don't know. So let's say it's 1,000 Rand for simplicity's sake. I go and say, I want to make a loan. And I've got my pension fund as my surety. So that automatically means, as we all know, is because the loan is fully guaranteed, the lender knows this person, if he defaults or she defaults, I will be able to get my 1,000 Rand back. So what would likely happen, as happens in home loans, is that the lender would say, well, I'm guaranteed I'm getting my money back. It's not an unsecured loan. This person has got something behind it. It's like if you're borrowing on your house, there's an asset behind it. In this instance, it's your pension fund. Similar principle. So you come better equipped to get your loan. And also, because they're not taking so much risk, the lender can then offer a better interest rate, as they do on home loans. Because as you know, I'm sure, if you are a member, or you're just an average person in the street, you want to take a loan, a lot of our people end up going to a loan shark. And then they might get, I don't know, 30% a month or something that they have to pay back, or something really ridiculous. That is not right, obviously. So the person wanting to take the loan is in a much stronger position in the negotiation, if you want to put it that way. And then the money does not get disinvested from the fund. It doesn't come out the fund. It stays invested. And the member then pays back the loan. Now, if the legislation facilitates it, we don't know what will happen in the industry, for example, where you might find that people could get a much softer loan than they would ever been able to get before. They pay it back, their pension remains intact. And so what's the damage? They got a loan, they didn't have to withdraw or leave the fund to try and withdraw money and then pay tax. Their money remained invested and they got the benefit of getting a loan which they could pay back. So, I mean, you know, I'm sure it's quite easy to see what the benefit would be. It is true that if every single person who is a member of a pension fund went and took a loan for 30% of their value, because we know how much assets are in the industry, and then they're all defaulted, and all this money needed to be paid out, that yes, it would impact. And that is in fact the argument that was put by some, to say no, everybody's going to get a loan. Well, everyone's going to take the money out the fund right in the beginning. That's not so. But everybody's going to get a loan. They're all going to default, and the whole system's going to come tumbling down. Well, that's not so. So as I said right from the beginning, in terms of the desirability of this bill, let's roll backwards. It was in 20, when did the virus came? In 2020. And we all know, as members of parliament and public representatives, what it's done out there. I don't have to bore you. We all know what it's done out there. And so where it came from was to say, well, how can we actually try to alleviate something? Can't fix the whole problem. We can't fix the economy properly because it's going to take time. We can't fix the whole pension fund issue because that's taking time, as we know. So what is possible? What can we do? Well, we could possibly make a facility available. Yes, it's a tiny little intervention, doesn't change the entire world or resolve the whole problem. But what it does do is for those people who can, in fact, get the facility and can, in fact, benefit from it without leaving their fund, without defaulting, etc., then it can add value to them. It's like being able to leverage your own home. That's why pension funds allow home loans at the moment. As they say, the argument is, well, you know, have a surety, get your house because it benefits you over time. Same principle. Why can't your pension fund be leveraged so that you get a better rate? You don't have to go to a loan shark, for example, and it can add value. Now, it won't be for everybody, so it won't be able to help everybody. But isn't it our job as public representatives to see what is possible? To say, well, we know the problem. It's like we can't fix it ourselves. It's like hard and it's going to take a long time. But can't we do something, some step that will make a difference? And then, of course, as we know, you will remember that time went by and some commentators said, well, you know, we don't need this bill anymore because, you know, the problem is gone. Well, it isn't gone. We've now got this new virus that the whole world is unfairly shutting us out on, because they're prejudiced. Now, why can't we do something that can maybe help the situation a little bit better? I do understand the concerns of the Treasury and other people to say, well, all this could be calamitous and catastrophe, etc., and you haven't thought it through properly. Well, I have. I have thought it through very carefully. And yes, it's not perfect, but nothing is. So I just hope that clarifies the perspective of it. Our job here today, as far as I understand it, then after much to do, is that we need to say, well, do we want to proceed with this or not? My view obviously is yes, because I and all of us are representatives of the people, and we know how difficult things are. And I do think it's important for the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa to be able to say to the people, we know there's a problem here, and we are actually trying to make the situation better. Sometimes a tiny little thing can be a catalyst. So I hope it answers the question, but I also thought I'd just put in a little bit extra there for clarity. Thank you very much, Chair. I do appreciate your time, allowing me the time. Thank you.
Okay. No. Thanks, Dr. George, for that clarity. We are now moving to item 3, consideration of motion of desirability on the Pension Funds Amendment Bill, B30 2020. We have to make sure that we do things according to the book. In terms of processing the committee under 286, we are now in the following items or sub rules. From I, it states as follows: after due deliberation, the committee must consider a motion of desirability on the subject matter of the bill, and if rejected, must immediately table the report and its report on the bill. So that's what is provided for on the bill, that after tabling this motion, if you proceed, then it means you have to go to the next stage. If not, the committee must immediately table the bill and its report on the bill. J, if the motion of the desirability is adopted, the committee must proceed to deliberate on the details of the legislation. K, the committee may recommend approval or rejection of the bill or present with its report an amended bill or a redraft bill, provided that in the case of a redraft, the subject of the bill has not been extended without the permission of the assembly as contemplated in paragraph B and C. Then L must report to the assembly in accordance with rule 288. I will come to rule 288. May report to the assembly on a bill introduced in the assembly and classified as being subject to section 18 subsection 1. No, this one is not relevant of the traditional leaders. The committee may propose an amendment that changes the classification of a section 75 to a section 76 bill. We are not doing that as of now. Then in terms of section rule 288, which is referred to in L, it says the assembly committee to which a bill is referred must table in the assembly its report, the bill that has been agreed on by it in its final amended or redrafted form as adopted by the committee where applicable, or if it has not agreed on a bill, the bill as referred to it, the supporting memorandum which was introduced with the bill, or if the memorandum has been amended by the committee, the amended memorandum, and if the bill was introduced by the by a member in his or her individual capacity, the views, if any, expressed on the bill by the relevant department in the National Executive Authority or executive organ of state in the national sphere of government. This Treasury has done, it has made a comment or expressed its view on this bill. And then from there, the committee may report to the assembly only after the JTM has classified the bill and has made its findings on the bill. Then outline what should be contained in the report. So under 286, we are now at I. Any comment, Norutando? Before we proceed with I?
No, Chair, no comment from my side. Thank you.
So now that we have duly deliberated on the report to consider the motion, we have to consider the motion of desirability on the Pension Fund Amendment Bill, B30-2020. So I put before committee members if the bill is desirable. Any mover for the desirability of the bill? Dr. George, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would move that the bill is in fact desirable, and I would propose that the committee should declare that it is in fact so. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. George. Dr. George has moved that the bill is desirable. Any seconder?
I second, Chairperson.
Akbar Vessels seconds. The bill has been seconded. Any objection? Honorable Gijiman Skosana. I see you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I object based on the fact that there's a serious lack of comprehensiveness in the bill, because any pension fund amendment bill requires a feasibility study with options and to take into consideration tax implications, especially where guarantees are applicable against a pension fund. So none of these, Honorable Chairperson, accompanies the amendment bill. Instead, the amendment bill seeks to bring about fundamental change through the insertion of a single clause, just a single clause. So Parliament cannot be expected to consider draft legislation that lacks the comprehensiveness that is required on such a serious matter. Secondly, on a point that was raised earlier by Honorable Komo, that there's no socio-economic or financial impact study in the bill. So on matters to do with personal finances of this nature, for those who hold pension funds, there should be a socio-economic or financial impact study that accompanies the amendment bill. So no such study has been submitted to Parliament to support the amendment bill, and Parliament is therefore asked to make a decision without the necessary evidence placed before it. So on the basis of that, Honorable Chairperson, I object. Thank you very much.
So I haven't unmuted myself. Honorable Skosana, object to the desirability of the motion. Any seconder? Honorable Mlolong?
I second, Chair. I think that the issues that have been raised by Honorable Skosana suffices and are comprehensive enough for me to support the objection.
Honorable Mrolong seconds the objection. Alan, you will have to assist me with the numbers so that it should not just be the mover, the seconder, the objection, the seconder. We have to be sure as to how many support the motion and how many are against the motion, so that we have got a proper record of this meeting. We should not leave it that two have supported and two have objected. Let it be properly recorded as to amongst the members how many supports the motion of desirability. We don't want to leave things to chances. Those who support the motion of desirability, can you raise your hands in the platform? Alan, you'll assist me with the records from your side. For now, I see Dr. George, Honorable Sarupen, and Honorable Voter Vessels. Are these the three hands or three members who support the motion of desirability?
That's correct, Chairperson.
Three also from your side?
That's right, Chair.
Okay. No, thanks. Honorable Vessels, are you saying something in the chat? Okay. Have withdrawn that. Those who don't support the motion of desirability, can you raise your hands in the platform? I see Honorable Skosana, Mavileta, Murolong, Nkomo. Alan, are there four members who are objecting to the bill?
That's correct, Chair. It's Mr. Skosana, Mr. Murolong, Ms. Mavileta, and Ms. Nkomo.
Okay. That's that. Okay. Okay, you can put your hands down, or you can lower your hands. Nolutando, well, what is the next process?
Chair, the next process is that if the committee decides that the bill is not desirable, then the committee must report to the House.
Okay. Yes, which is provided for in I.
Correct, Chair.
Okay, we must immediately. Why do they qualify it by saying immediately table the bill and its report on the bill?
I have no idea, Chair.
Yeah, you know, the rules, sometimes you have to seek clarity because you might take things for granted that you understand only to find you don't understand. Alan and Dr. Sope, when are we presenting the report on this bill to the National Assembly so that we comply with the I and the 288, Rule 288?
Chair, as I understand it, it's not currently on the National Assembly program. I'm not sure if they will schedule it based on the outcome of this meeting. I would need to confirm that. But as it stands, it's not, to my knowledge, on the agenda of the National Assembly yet.
Okay. Okay, Secretariat, together with the legal team, can you make sure that you find out from the programming committee as to what is the next step? Because I'm worried. It says that if rejected, the committee must immediately table the bill and its report on the bill. So let's interpret that properly as to what does that mean, so that we are not found to be on the wrong side of the law. So Nolutando and Alan and the team, just confer with the programming committee that this is how far we are, but what does it mean under I when it says that we have to table the report immediately? Thanks. Let's move to item four. I think we have come to the end of the meeting, unless there are announcements. Alan?
Only announcement, next week, only meeting is consideration and adoption of minutes of the committee. So that's the meeting on Tuesday.
Okay, thanks very much. Thanks very much, honorable members, the parliamentary support team, National Treasury. I see also here we have colleagues from FSCA, and then who else is here in the platform? PMG, as always. And then we have the media. Yes. Thanks very much for all of you who are in the platform. The meeting is adjourned. We'll meet again next week on Tuesday, same platform. Thanks.